I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to the fifth BWI Live of the Penn State spring football season. I'm Thomas Frank Carr, Sean Fitz, Nate Bauer. We are recapping Penn State practice and comments from James Franklin and other coaches and players after practice. And guys, I'm scraping the bottom of the barrel. I'm getting to the bottom of the well in terms of different ways of saying, I don't know what we really saw or heard yesterday. So that's going to be up to you guys, too, today to, like, help me out with that, because there's a little bit of, I don't know. I feel like this is a particularly stunted conversation so far this season, Nate Bauer. We'll get to James Franklin's comments and some of that stuff a little bit later. Hopefully we get Fitz back, because it looks like he is now a permanent circle on our screen.
But yeah, I don't know where Fitz went. That's the question.
I'm starting with you. Offensive observations from yesterday. What did you see? What was interesting?
I did not see Catron Allen.
What do you make of that? You know, because there's a couple of guys we've been tracking that have not been at practice. Again, go to bluewhiteillustrated.com for that information to get it first off immediately and second off in more detail. But what do you make of those absences, with Catron being the one you're talking about here?
Yeah, I think 'tis the season for guys who need to be healthy, to get healthy, right? This is an opportunity, right? I think that certainly, you know, that conversation about Drew Shelton as, you know, like, what's the balance of getting something fixed and being totally healthy versus what you stand to benefit from being at spring practice, and really the delay that it puts you on if you hold it off even further, if you push it off even further, you know, to get that kind of stuff done. So yeah, when I see veteran players not around, it doesn't really give me all that much pause, right? I make a little bit of a presumption that, you know. And it's my understanding, I'll combo this. There is no reason to be concerned based on what I understand of Catron's situation. So, So he's a guy. Quentin Martin, also not there with the running backs, which I do think is curious, because he was there for the start of spring practice. We haven't seen him for the past.
I have a full-blown conspiracy theory about that one, which we've been developing in the BWI text thread over the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, so David Kensey. Yeah. It's David, right?
David Kensey, yeah.
He's a walk-on.
Walk-on transfer running back. Has been wearing 25. After wearing 27 at Winter Media Day, suddenly he's wearing 25 in camp after not wearing 25 the first week.
To make us all think that he's Quentin Martin.
I firmly believe that is what's going on, because we didn't notice for a week, and then suddenly I was like, here's a picture of Quentin Martin, and I went, wait a minute. That looks nothing like Quentin Martin. And then I saw him next to people, and it was fairly obvious that it was not the 25 you were expecting.
Yeah. Yeah. So certainly the running backs there. What else did we cover yesterday? Right, the receivers. I think certainly looping in what we saw and what you saw personally with Keandre Lambert-Smith, combined with what James Franklin said about him, it was really the first time I felt like this spring that Franklin addressed Keandre like specifically. He was asked specifically about Keandre. It wasn't just about the whole group of wideouts, and it sounded familiar.
Right? I was going to say, Fitz, what was your opinion of the phrasing of that particular comment from James Franklin about he's flashing, maybe more consistently flashing? Like, I don't know. I don't know how to take any of those comments.
Yeah, it's tough because he's been in the program now for going on 5 years. So, like, yeah. You would think he'd be flashing more consistently, but like, you know, with everything with Keandre, it's at a different rate. Like they think that he can be a great player, but you got to get there at some point. And, you know, I think that the offense, the way that they've installed, the way that they've come along, you know, it's going to stunt some things for the now and hopefully mm-hmm. get some benefit on the back end. But at the same time, like you want to see, you know, It was interesting the way that he framed it was that he needs to be our big play guy and he needs to do that more consistently. Well, big plays aren't consistent. You know that. Yeah. Like this is not a situation where you know, every time you touch the ball, he's going to go for 60 yards. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you need that element because, Nate, why did he bring Andy Kolarnicki in? Explosive plays. Like that needs to be your guy. That needs to be your guy. Trey Wallace needs to be your guy. Sorry to put
sharp
spot like that. No, those guys need to be your guys and they need to be at a rate of consistency, which is not a video game rate where you run, you know, where you get guys on certain routes and things like that, but you need to get those guys at a rate of consistency that you yep. can actually break some of those
and present a credible threat. There's also just the idea of his presence or the presence of a threatening wide receiver changes the way a defense reacts to your offense from a game plan perspective and a play-to-play perspective. The other thing I think that I've been noticing in my analysis of what they do at Kansas and kind of reading the tea leaves, what we have seen at practice is they're going to throw the ball, sure, but this is going to be a running team. This is going to be a running offense. You look at the breakdown last year, and I know that Kansas is different than Penn State, but given what we've seen from James Franklin in recent history and kind of the direction the offenses have been trending is that they want to run the ball with their talented players, incorporate tight ends, and be explosive selectively as opposed to what I think the perception of them with Joe Moorhead early on in James Franklin's tenure, which was go for broke, go get those big plays all the time. And whether or not that's true, whether or not that's a fair assessment of those offenses, the way that the running game presented itself as big plays, but feast or famine, it is a different offensive philosophy now than it was previously. It just seems that way.
Yeah, and the threat is the key aspect of that. I mean, you don't want your offense to be an inside drill. And for those yeah. that didn't play, inside drill is just linemen, backs, tight ends against basically your front seven. And you need somebody on the outside to be a threat, just as you need that quarterback to be a threat in the run game. Like that's the thing is to put those guys into chaos, to put those guys into critical decision-making, which we've talked about before. You need to make college players make decisions because that's when your big plays happen. You need to have the threat of something happening and the threat needs to start under center. Well, the guy taking the snaps yeah. and then the guys on the outside. And, you know, you just haven't seen the credible evidence so far to say that they've gotten to where they want to be. And now you don't expect them to be there in spring. Like you shouldn't expect them to be there in spring because this is a new offense. This is a new concepts and things like that. But at the same time, you want to continue to see the progress. And we don't see enough at practice to tell you one way or the other that progress is there.
One of the things I can say is we haven't seen them throw the ball deep at all. Like they have been working on intermediate and short routes for the most part in front of us. The last team that could really generate those big plays we talked about is in 2017, 2016. Speaking of big plays and heroes, Trace McSorley. You want to meet the Penn State quarterback that stole the hearts of the entire fan base? Well, he is going to be at Nittany Cards Plus from 5 to 6:30 on Friday before the blue-white game. It's an autograph signing. Now, this is important to know. Tickets are $25. To get an autograph ticket starts at $25. Nittany Cards on Facebook or Instagram to get details on that. And the reason we're talking about that is because we are going to be live from Nittany Cards Plus on Friday at 2 p.m. So we are the warm-up act for Trace McSorley at Nittany Cards Plus, which you can see here on the screen. They are the only dedicated sports trading card and collectible shop, 1631 South Atherton Street, next to the PNC in State College. On Atherton Street, Nittany Cards has a huge selection of single cards, graded slabs, sealed hobby boxes, and licensed brand from Topps, Bowman, Panini, and Upper Deck. And I can tell you from experience, I am now a customer at Nindy Cards Plus. I bought one of the cards that you saw there on the screen for my nephew, whose birthday it was recently. And here's the thing, Fitz. I don't know anything about cards. And I don't have kids. I don't have sons, but I do have a nephew. So I went in and I said, hey, Jason, what's a good card to get? And he explained the differences between a couple of them and said, like, so this one is the one you want to get. I got a Drew Aller, essentially a rookie card, the 2022 print of Drew Aller, for my nephew. So he was able to guide me through, hey, like, even within his shop, we got this. You can understand the different things. Now, if you are not an ignorant person like me, you can go in and see all the stuff they have, and you can have a great conversation with him. When we were there, people, they've got a cool little area where you can go and sit down and open up your cards and check out what you got. You won't be able to do that at 2 o'clock on Friday, because that's where we're going to be sitting. Because we're going to be broadcasting live Friday at 2 p.m. from Nittany Cards. Plus, we're going to do a preview of the blue-white game. So come join us, say hi, hang out. You can see us do the show, and you can see how much taller Fitz is than the rest of us in person. Should be a lot of fun.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Fitz, coming back to you. Practice, defense. What did you see from that group yesterday inside Haluba Hall, understanding the constraints that we have with the offense and the defense, because the defensive line is about a mile away.
Yeah, Bane Train made a good question, or had a good question in the chat. He asked how much practice do we get to see, and it's not a lot. It's about 15 or 20 minutes or so, and we get to see the same drills every time. Check out my Twitter. We got to see the punters and kickers running from linebackers. Always fun, especially when Gabe Most was involved. But no, I mean, that's the snapshot of practice that you get. There have been times when we've gotten scrimmages before, we've gotten things like that, but so far, no go this spring with Penn State. So not a surprise. It's actually pretty standard in terms of college football. There are some that just have a wide open door policy that, you know, fans can come in and media can come in. And, you know, it. But as I've said before, there's a lot less that goes on at practice from a play to play perspective than you would think. It's just more about the tangible growth. And I think that's kind of what we track. And we talk about that stuff. Yeah. From an observational standpoint. No KJ Winston yesterday. Jaywan Sider put out a picture over the weekend at Easter. KJ's got a cast on his hand. 2+2, yes. So there are guys that are bumped up that I don't think you're going to see in the spring game. And we've talked about that on the site of BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. But it's to the point where, you know, some of those veterans, it's time to take a step back, let some of the young guys get in. Excited to see what King Mack can do at safety because of it. Excited to see how that transition with Lamont Payne is going. Dakari Nelson was back there last night. He missed last week's practice availability there. Defensive line, yes, they're far away, but they're big, and you can see what's going on there. Have stayed fairly healthy so far, which is good, because we talk about those veterans getting taking a step back and letting the younger guys go. Well, you look at defensive end, and Amin Vanover's a veteran, but he's a guy vying for a starting spot. Same with Zariah Fisher. You say the same about Abdul Carter. You know, like there are guys that are out there, and that level of competition right there with the defensive line and what they're doing in spring camp is it's pretty cool to watch, because it is, hey, you could take your foot off the gas a little bit, but if you do, somebody's going to come in and take your spot. And we've heard good things about Vanover. Zariah Fisher was a guy that really started with the buzz this offseason, but Vanover's had, I think, a really good spring. And it's going back to the spot, or going back to the place that we keep going to, where you have a certain subset of positions on this roster you just feel pretty good about whoever's going to be there. Defensive end, you lose a Dee Sizek, you lose Chop Robinson, but there's some pretty good guys there.
I guess the one observation I would give you from practice was, and this is kind of a general observation about the receivers, because I think that there's this intense focus on how do you get these guys to play better? How do you fix this room? And James Franklin has said, like, there's a lot of talent in that room. It became pretty obvious yesterday when you combine the different skills that go into receiving, Nate, there are some really good all-around talent. Tyler Johnson and Trey Wallace move differently than other athletic players. James Franklin put out recently, like, he keeps talking about Trey Wallace as, you know, a true athlete. And then you watch him do what are essentially rebounding drills, which are the high point drills in practice, and it is different the way he moves. So some of those guys that they have the obvious talent, it's just putting it all together for these guys. So as we go through spring, we're going to talk a little bit more about the depth chart part of this conversation, but just the putting it all together in a new offense. Is there anything we can understand from the spring to say that these guys are taking a step, that they are moving in the right direction, given that, you know, we get to see these glimpses into individual periods? We don't get to see a lot of the against a defensive back or anything like that. I know we've had this conversation previously, but, like, what are your areas of critique where you're thinking, okay, I see progress or I see something different than I did before?
No. No, yeah. We can't. No,
I tried. It.
That's cool.
I tried.
But no, look, you can get feedback. Look, reading between the lines is my favorite thing in the world. And James Franklin offers so many glimpses into what is actually happening. Like, it's not. I don't think there's that much to it to be able to see what he's saying. And so when I collectively. And I would love to do this right here and just hatch this out with both of you guys. I feel like the receiver conversation needs to be reframed into understanding what Julian Fleming is, okay? Mm-hmm. First and foremost, which is a possession receiver. He is going to be a reliable target who is not going to give you 60 in most cases, right? Like, that's who he is. But he helps Keandre, right? Keandre helps Trey. Trey needs to be healthy to help Keandre.
Right.
Right. Like, the three of those guys can give you a receiving unit that is pretty good. I do. Yeah. Like, I actually think that. I think that so, they can, the three of those guys together, but they complement each other. They, when you lose a piece or when something is missing from that ingredient, or when an ingredient, I should say, is missing from that recipe, it messes things up. It flubs things up. And so, they really need, I feel, as a team and an offense, to have those three guys acting in unison. If you can get somebody else, right, if you can get a Caden Saunders going, if you can get Omari Evans going, if you can get one of those, if you can hit on one of those other guys, great. That, like, even better. But you really, 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 really need those three that I just mentioned to be on. They have to be the best versions of themselves this season. And that includes, specifically for Trey, not being hurt. Right. Yeah. And you don't want to sit here and say, oh, well, it's like, it's his fault. It's not. But at the same time, he has to be there. That's a yeah. big piece of what they're going to be able to do.
So I guess the way I was thinking of phrasing that, Nate, and you, I think you make the point of they don't have a number one receiver, but they have a group that can be more than the sum of their parts. They can approximate an efficient passing game and all those traits you need through three players. Fitz, what happens when one of those guys isn't performing or gets injured? And that's really, to me, like, when you look at the depth chart and you make a great point about Fleming provides stability for the unit to move Trey back inside. Keandre back inside. What happens if anything happens to those three? Like, is there, I guess that's another part of this conversation is, do you have a better balance this year?
I wish I could tell you yes, but I mean, it's like Fleming's going to have to stay on the field. Like he's going to have to be the constant, I think. Like not necessarily the number one, but the constant. And I think that's going to help some people. I'd be interested to see. I think they want to go more 11 personnel just to, you know, sort of spread things out and help things out in the running game. They don't have a situation where you have to get Theo Johnson and Tyler Warren on the field at the same time. Like you kind of felt that way in the last couple of years. Now you've got Tyler Warren, of course, and then you've got maybe a little bit more of a gap to Khalil Dinkins, Andrew Rappelier. Rappelier help out with the blocking, of course, but like it gives you the opportunity. I know you're going to look at this and say, does the second tight end outweigh the third receiver? And I think it's closer than it's been in a long time, not necessarily because of the receivers getting better, but I just think you don't have that constant threat at tight end. Like you've got some good players there, but you don't have that same level that you had in the last couple of years. So I think that'll be interesting. I mean, we can't sit here and tell you Trey Wallace is going to stay on the field. Like if he does, he's got that potential. The thing that I keep getting back to is talent does not always equal production. Talent needs to equal production for this group. And so far, like we're just going to sit here and hash it out in the spring, but it's a long way until August. It's a long way until September. And we can't sit there and tell you it's going to be all roses until then.
I just, you make a great point. Because again, watching some of the receivers yesterday, Malik McClain looks awesome. Like if I'm a scout and I'm looking at a receiver and I'm picking out of that lineup when they go through, which dude looks like, I hate this term, but the alpha receiver? Well, it's going to be the one that's 6'4", built really well, and jumps over everybody else. And like Malik McClain is all those things, and he's a pretty decent route runner from an ability standpoint, but putting it all together, and that's where, you know, Julian Fleming has to come in and provide that stability you were hoping from some of those transfers from last year. Is you need to have those reliable guys. And I was having this conversation yesterday before practice with somebody about, like, as Nate said, that's what he needs to be. He needs to unlock this receiver group by being a poor approximation here, but Parker Washington, somebody who's going to be dependable, who's going to catch passes, who's going to get you first downs, who's going to get those clutch plays to make sure you stay on the football field. And that's just, you know, this group, we'll see how they deploy them in basic senses in about a week at the blue-white game. But until then, you know, it's just going to be conversation here that Fitz, I feel like we've had this conversation three times or four times on the show dating back to February.
Yeah, it's tough because you want those all around guys. And I think Penn State's got some guys like you go and going back to the video game here, you go to create a player and you get a certain amount of numbers for your attributes to get. And you want to bump up speed. You want to bump up hands. You want to bump up. Well, there's going to be deficiencies in there. And I see a lot of that with Penn State. Like you've got a lot of great things, like great traits. Nate, why are you laughing at me? You got a lot of great traits, but you've also got some shortcomings that you have to overcome, and that's what they got to figure out. So we will see what happens. Sorry, somebody thought Nate was wearing a bathrobe in the chat, and that one got me because it really looks like you are. But no, you got to make up for those shortcomings, figure out how to get that going through. And then you've got a guy like Julian Fleming who has a lot of really good traits, but maybe not as many holes, and maybe that's what you need.
Yeah. So Fitz, earlier this week you had a great intel piece over at bluewhiteillustrated.com. I feel like you and Nate trade off week to week about who's going to be dropping the info before practice. So not without going into all of the insider information to save that for the people that subscribe to bluewhiteillustrated.com. For people here who maybe want to go check it out, what did you write about? What did you learn this week from Penn State football from a high-level sense you want to talk about here?
Well, we talked about this coming into the spring, that we had high expectations for one freshman in particular. And last year, we had high expectations for, you know, a couple, but Alex Burkmeier was the guy that we looked at as the guy that could maybe take that first step, and he didn't. And that happens. Like, he obviously had a lot to work on. Cooper Cousins was that guy this year. I'd feel differently about Cooper Cousins than I did about Alex Burkmeier coming out of the spring. I think this kid is good. Like, everybody you talk to, they're like, yeah, he's really good. He's really good. And they don't say that about a bunch of true freshmen. So I am excited to see what Cooper Cousins can do. I am very intrigued to see how they handle it, because they seem to like what Nick Dawkins is doing. And center is a spot where you don't really have, for lack of a better word, co-starters. This is a situation where I'm fascinated to see how that works. Do you maybe work him in at guard? Do you maybe, you know, move him around a little bit, help him out. You got some injuries up front right now. So maybe you have to find out what you have at different positions. So I'm intrigued to see how that goes. But the early feedback on Cooper Cousins is, hey, five stars is a lot, but this kid's really good.
One of the rare opportunities where the hype is matched by the actual production so far, which again, it's always hard to match the hype because the hype is out of control.
And here's the other thing. He's an offensive lineman. He's going to get beat. He's a freshman offensive lineman. He's going to get beat. Maybe somebody beats him in the blue white game. He had some of those moments though over the weekend, but like, just, I hate to say this, but take our word for this one. I think this kid's going to be really good.
Well, you gave us a perfect segue into James Franklin's press conference. And I don't mean to just start with what I said and the question I asked, but it did come up a couple times from what you said. And here in the comments, Mecha Engineer says, T-Frank, when you break down the depth chart, which one of these players do you see being co-starters? Nate, the infamous semantics conversation that we had yesterday, you got to word your questions correctly. By the way, Mecha Engineer donating to the channel. Always appreciate that. Always want to give a shout out to people who do that here on the channel. I asked yesterday, can you have co-starters at center, or can you have... Really what I was talking about is there's an or on the depth chart for certain positions like left guard last year, or, I don't know, running back, where you would... James Franklin has said, in other ways, we view both of these players as starters for our team. Doesn't mean that they're going to be the co-starters, but... can you do that at center? And what was your impression of that particular conversation yesterday?
He beat you on a technicality, T. Frank. Like, yeah, that's he right. That wily veteran James Franklin knows how to win a game of words. And so your misstep, which wasn't a misstep, you asked a perfectly fine question, but he was able to latch onto, I don't know if I've ever called anybody a co-starter. You might find it in a deep, dark basement, right? Like, wasn't that?
that's why they always say never go head to head with a PSAC psychology major. It just
don't.
Oh yeah.
You're going to lose.
The elite of the elite.
I married one. So it makes, that's actually accurate.
So, but I think, to me, my takeaway was, look, and he has said this more plainly this spring, he's not going to make anybody feel on the team, right? The players themselves are all searching for pecking order information. They all want to know where they stand. And it is very much his mindset. And now this is, I think that there's a duality to this, right? It's not just encouraging competition. It's not just making sure that you have a heightened state of, competition in spring. It's also, you're living in the transfer portal era. So if those two things combined, you're trying to not give as much of that information as you possibly can.
Yeah.
And so you're not going to, like, he's just not going to say it. He's going to refuse as much as he can any inkling into where that stands, because it's important for everybody. It's important for Cooper Cousins to continue to stay motivated, to not feel as though he's out of that competition. And conversely, it's important, extremely important, based on the question that he answered after you, which was about Nick Dawkins. Right. And what is Nick Dawkins' presence? If Nick Dawkins is a guy that you're counting on to be a leader and has this gravity and has an ability to connect with the rest of the team, what does that do to him if he understands on April 2nd that, well, no, you can't have co-starters at center. That's a one guy job. And the true freshman is the guy that is going to win that job. So
yeah,
I don't think that your question was unfair in any capacity. It's just, to me, reading between the lines, that seems to be where James Franklin is coming from.
Yeah. There are questions that are a little too close to home that coaches then don't answer. And by the way, I don't want this to, we're having fun with this. Like, in Correct. No way was I offended by the way James Franklin answered my question. In fact, I was thinking about it this morning, and like, when a lot of coaches don't want to answer your question, they'll make you feel stupid for what you said. Like, other coaches, they'll get defensive and angry and they'll lash out. James Franklin has always been polite with the media, if nothing else. So let's just make that clear about this conversation, because these things can be misconstrued on the internet. By the way, because I was so annoyed at how I had phrased the question, I don't remember a single thing he said, and I need to listen back to it. Fitz, moving on from that, I get to continue that conversation. It feels like, is this a deepening of a process within the transfer portal era, or is this particular team with certain positions? Like, we start talking about receiver. We had the offensive conversation was about receiver this week. But James Franklin last week asked about when, I don't think he was even asked about receiver. And he said, hey, there's a lot of guys that want to know where they stand. And spring practice is not going to give you any of that. This is just laying the foundation. That's been his preach point this season of what he wants to get across to everybody. Is this more of that than it has been previously because of the situation in certain positions and with the transfer portal? And it's how many scholarships they have on the roster? Or is this something that we're just getting used to, because it feels like there's less information, there's less honest conversation about these things, about the depth chart, which Nate talked about, than there has been previously?
Well, I think number one, there's less going on in a spring practice because you're doing a lot of install. You're doing a lot of things that need to get you where you need to be going into the summer, which is not necessarily the same place you want to be going into preseason practice. So I think that goes into it. Also, you don't want to step in it and give somebody a reason to get out and hit the road or test those waters and things like that. Because I tell you what, people are paying attention. Like, parents are paying attention. High school coaches are paying attention. College coaches are paying attention to what everyone says, because if there is a window in there, and we talk about, I don't want to say legal tampering, but we talk about the ways to get around things, loopholes and things of that nature, like, that's going to happen this spring, especially when Penn State is well over the 85 number. And does the 85 number ever come into play? Not really, but like, you've got some attrition that's probably going to happen. You just don't want to overflow and have attrition that you're not expecting. Have a guy that you are relying on, whether that be a starter or not. Like, because, hey, the thing is, Franklin talked about the offensive line last night. The thing is, you're not going to play 5 offensive linemen this year. You're going to play 9 offensive linemen this year because of injuries, because of these things that pop up through the year, and it's going to be something you have to deal with. So it's not just keeping your first 5 happy. It's not just keeping your first 22 happy. It's about top to bottom getting those guys through. And then when you do that and you have a guy that's going in, you wrote a story this week about guys that are late in their career that could potentially bloom and be, doesn't have to be a star, can be just be a contributor.
Yeah.
To get those guys into the right mindset where they can, in the latter part of their career, continue to get better, like Devon Ellis last year. That is a balance that we're still trying to figure out, especially in this portal era, because there are a lot of guys that could have stepped out easily and you know, gone, whether it be down a level or down a level in Power 4, you know, like that. There are more options out there than ever before. So it's about that delicate balance. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you have guys, if you're keeping more guys than like you thought, you draw up this number and you thought, hey, we're going to lose 7 guys after spring. If you're keeping, or if you're keeping 5 of those, like, you feel better than if you lost 10 or if you lost 12, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. It seems like now in this particular light, every word is a weapon and every day is a battle to keep all of this stuff together in the transfer portal era. So it's an interesting reframing of what has classically been our biggest window into the team outside of the actual season, which is these spring practices and understanding where players are getting better. And, you know, we get that conversation on an individual level and asking about individual players, but these kind of collective conversations, I think more so because what Fitz and what Nate said here has been more obscured. So there's been more conversation. There's been, I think, it just feels overall, and again, maybe my vibe check is wrong, just feels like there's less information so far than in previous years. Nate, get to the mailbag,
maybe.
Or do you want to continue that?
No, it's fine.
Okay. All right, let's get to it. Unfortunately, I ran out of time this week for YouTube Comment Theater. We had some great entries. But like I said, I always want to make sure the people who comment on the YouTube channels, they get to have a day in the spotlight, a moment in the spotlight here on the live show. And Fitz, you've got a couple of good questions here in the mailbag today. We're starting with Woolis22 from the YouTube channel. He said, this is obviously a non-serious question that's specifically for Sean, because he referenced NCAA 14. Who do you think are the top five rated Penn State players on the EA College Football 25 game?
That is a good question. I think, I just had to pull up my list of sort of a roster ranking here. It's going to be, it's tough because you don't know how they weight certain positions and things like that. But anyway, I've got Abdul Carter being one of them. Mm-hmm. And this is not necessarily 1 to 5, but Abdul Carter, Nick Singleton, Nate, I think would be in there because of the attributes that he has. KJ Winston, I think would be in there. Denai Dennis Sutton probably be in there. I have Drew Aller written down because of the physical talents that he has. And that's certainly, you know, I think that's undeniable. It's just, you know, for ranking these things, we would see what happens. But Tyler Warren as a tight end, I think, you know, would be a standout guy, especially with the numbers that he put up last year. So I think there'd be guys up there. Jalen Reed, I think, would be in my personal rankings as well. It's different with my personal rankings and the guys that, you know, sort of put these rankings out there. It's tough because, yeah, you just some guys fit better in a system than in a make-believe video game. So those are the guys that I would have up there. Maybe Zane Durant, Catron Allen. I think, you know, you've got talent here. No, no doubt about it. But those are the guys that I would sort of single out. Top five is tough because you don't want to leave anybody out and then hear about it later.
you got Catron Allen in there at the end. Like, you snuck him in there in that conversation because that was one where I think you make a great point. Height, weight, speed guys are going to do really well. And then it's like, who's good at football and how do you massage that in a video game that's spitting out a number based on an algorithm that doesn't really have the nuance of humanity involved? Next question here. This is an interesting one from Poncho570. This is more of a discussion question. And he says, can you discuss an overall net positive negative towards changing the format of college football? Spring game against an actual scrimmage with an FCS opponent, and then replacing that FCS opponent or a non-conference lower level competition with a group of six opponent in the regular season. Example being scrimmage Villanova in the spring and then play Akron in the regular season. Nate, adding in essentially a preseason to college football with the way that things are going, is that what are the positives and negatives of that?
Yeah. Well, one, I think when the Big Ten and SEC break off from NCAA, they can do whatever they want. And that sounds like a perfectly reasonable thing for them to want to do. Right? James Franklin, other coaches have been talking about a preseason being necessary in college football for years anyway, right? To have an opportunity to have a warm-up game because you start immediately and it counts against the clock, right? Like, that's not the best way of doing things. And so, sure. Yeah. I think that totally makes sense, especially if what I'm saying might happens, then you're going to have a situation where these super leagues, it's all league. You're just playing 12 games.
It's an NFL model. Like, you're playing against the competition that matters right away. Yeah,
for sure. But then do you have other opportunities in the spring to test where you're at to do right? I mean, if a break happens, you have to understand that you shed all of the model. You shed everything that has to do with NCAA restrictions. It can be reimagined however you want it to be reimagined. There can be limits on number of practices, when you start like all of that stuff is currently mandated. And again, the NCAA is simply a member institution that enacts the rules that are set forth by its voting members, right? And its rules committees and all of those things. But there's an opportunity in a future that I don't think is that far away to say, okay, I'm not going to actually use an example here, but the person on the rules committee from college X that has a horrible football team that gets a say and a weighted say in how these things are done, their opinion is no longer relevant. It's no longer necessary here. We're going to go to the guys who are living it, who get to set these rules moving forward.
Fitz, I want to point out one particular part of this question, and not to give a James Franklin semantics sort of twist to this, but a spring scrimmage, is that as valuable as a August scrimmage, a preseason scrimmage, where maybe you know a little bit more about your team right before you go in? And what are the pros and cons then of a scrimmage before the actual regular season, when you are increasing the variable of injury in that particular situation? And does it have to be like a public scrimmage, or how would you do any of those things with the timeline involved?
Yeah, I think that a spring scrimmage against an FCS team or whatever lower level is created with the eventual breakaway here, is that makes a lot of sense, because it helps them. And I think it would be a situation where, and this isn't a handout game, but like, it would help take away some of the sting from the budgetary crises that these lower level schools are going to come into. So I think it would be an open scrimmage. I think it would be a blue white game where you might charge whatever to get in or something like that. But I think that from a strictly football perspective, I think they'd like that. They like going against different schemes. You like trying to make your guys think about something that they haven't seen all spring. And I think that that's something that they've been trying to not push hard on for years, but like, this is an intriguing option. Like, you've got an opportunity to help some other programs out. And you think about the coaches that are saying this, a lot of them started at that level or below that level. You know, there's a bunch of guys that started the D2 level and D3 level and things like that. So I think that happens eventually, but there are so many bigger projects in front of that to get where they need to go, that's probably down the road. But I think it'd be awesome. I think it'd be awesome for not only them, I think it'd be awesome for the FCS guys. And to be honest with you, there's a bit of me that like thinks about that's a scouting opportunity for those FCS programs. So the guy says, we're heading to a pro model. I mean, a pro model in name and in action here. Yeah, absolutely.
But just to add on that, not necessarily a pro model that's limited only to the NFL, right? Mm-hmm. I think that there are bits and pieces, and I am not a soccer guy at all. Fitz, you can speak way more eloquently than I can.
Give
on
me
this.
Relegation. Oh my God.
I'm not saying relegation. But friendlies, right? Yep. Like an opportunity.
Well, how does basketball do it? They have their closed door scrimmages and things like that. And I think they work pretty well, because you want to play, like, you don't want to play with yourself. I mean, that's
kind of Fitz.
I was halfway there. I didn't want to go there. And
did Ryan Snyder just possess your body for a second?
No, we're not there yet. So anyway,
turn the show off.
Next Mom. Question.
Yeah. Let's get to this particular question. Okay, let's go with this Drew Aller question, because this kind of speaks to collective conversation versus individual player conversation. CJ Philly says, seems to be very little chatter about Drew Aller and his progression within the new offense. Is there any feeling in the building that Drew is looking like he's going to take the next needed step this season? Is this a function of, we don't ask the question so we don't get the answer, or is there less information here, guys? Fitz, what do you think?
I think there's less information just based off of that's the way they go about things. You know, we've talked to people that have been to practice, and, you know, it's been certainly up and down with the quarterbacks, and you would expect that based off of the way that they're putting in a new offense and going against a pretty good defense. So I don't think it's out of the ordinary. And on top of that, you know, a lot of times when we're talking about the spring, we do hear more about the guys that are eating up those reps behind the starters, if that makes any sense. So I think that's something we'll continue to talk about on BlueWhiteIllustrated.com, probably more so than the podcast. But yeah, I think that there's definitely, it's worth asking. I mean, we've talked about that with the receivers. Well, there's a couple parts to the passing game there. So I think that they need to continue to get better.
Nate, do you have anything to add to that, or can I throw a different question at you?
To be determined.
Okay, we're going on to the next question.
Yeah.
Nuke from the Blue White Illustrated message board says, as we approach the end of the spring semester and next football season is in the offing, What should I be feeling about positional depth at each level of the defense? Concern, hope, false hope, or confidence? Nate, how are you reading the defensive depth at each position?
Depth. Good. Yeah. Very good on the defensive line across the board. Maybe you can have a conversation about needing a fifth defensive tackle. Maybe you can have a conversation about needing a fifth defensive end, though I think they have that. Linebacker, they need to solidify some things. I think Franklin said that last week, right? Yeah. Damier Robinson is one of those guys. And in the same, right, in the secondary, with the emergence, I saw an Audavian Collins post earlier.
Yep. That's what we're getting to next.
Yeah, that you got two corners that just came in from the transfer portal that are going to play. You've got guys from last year who were taking steps that you would anticipate play, right? I don't think that there are any real questions as to a two deep at any of those positions in the secondary. And really, I think they go three for the most part across the board. So I think that the general, other than the linebackers, and I'm not sure linebackers is what you would call a concern, but overall you would feel pretty good to great about just about everywhere on the defensive side of the ball. It's just a matter of, like, okay, depth is one thing. What is the top level that you have? Those are two separate conversations.
Yeah. Fitz, can you pick up that thread for us?
Yeah, I think you look at the storylines at these certain positions. And, you know, last year we talked about the defensive tackles adding size and eventually, like, they came on and were solid. Like, you talk about how much further do these position groups have to go until they're the best version of themselves. And I think defensive end is probably, I don't want to say they're not far from where they're going to be, but, like, you feel pretty good about putting five guys out there. And you don't say that about any position, really. Feel pretty good about getting five guys in there. And then, like, Smith Vilbert, what do you do with Smith Vilbert? Like, he could be a player. I don't think he'd be like a frontline starter for this group, but he could be a player. Like, but that's the situation that you're in at defensive end, where you're debating. Like, last year we were talking about the third and fourth tight end. Like, yeah, you're in a pretty good spot when your conversation revolves around the third and fourth tight end. Well, with defensive end, it revolves around the sixth defensive end. That's good. The fifth defensive tackle, which is good, which you need to figure out the fifth defensive tackle, because Deion Barnes has a lot next year to focus on. And that's going to be a storyline all offseason next year again. Linebacker, you're still trying to figure things out at the top. And I think that that's the question there. You know what Kobe King's going to bring. You yep. think you know what Tony Rojas is going to bring. You don't know that until he gets into the line of fire there, Don DeLuca. And then you're figuring out, how do you solidify that? And the question is about depth. How do you solidify that? And is how much can Tamir Robinson, Kevin Keyes provide to you? Like, that's the question there. And that question is a little bit closer to the top. So that's where you have the concern there.
Yeah.
Corner,
yeah.
You've got three sets of three guys that can play. It's just a matter of hashing that out and seeing which ones are the best. I say before, sound like Terry Smith's agent when I do, you feel pretty good about whoever they're going to put out there. It's just a matter of throwing them again in a line of fire and seeing what they do. Safety, you know, there's a delineation there between the first three guys. And then, you know, King Mack is continuing to be a guy that they see a ton of talent in, but, you know, you got to be more consistent there. So I think that's kind of how I feel about the defense. I feel fine, like, feel perfectly fine about the defense. It's just, they've got some kinks to work out, especially in the middle of that defense and at that linebacker spot.
Yeah. And that's what I wrote about last week. And what James Franklin has outlined this spring is, yes, it's great that Abdul Carter's moving to defensive end. He can be an impact player there, but it does create a hole. And whether or not they fill that hole with depth, you know, if your second will linebacker is Tony Rojas versus your second will linebacker is question mark, there's a difference there. And this is a team that has had an embarrassment of riches at linebacker, where they changed parts of their scheme and how they were doing stuff because they had to fit enough of them on the football field. And suddenly now they've got to find out who those guys are. They're going to be the starters, lock those in, and then find, you know, the fourth linebacker, fifth linebacker. It accelerates that conversation about some of those young guys where maybe you didn't think right away they had to be as redshirt freshmen part of the conversation. And now they do, which may never come up, but if it does, We all remember Cam Brown playing against Michigan in 2000, whatever that was, when he was 205-pound linebacker out there because everyone was injured. Like, there are moments where that has happened, and they try to have a memory, an institutional memory about those things. Fitz, do you want to go with recruiting, or do you want to go with special teams next?
Special teams, always. Come on.
All right.
What kind of question is that?
Well, you know, you've got an expertise in a bunch of different areas. Want to set you up for success. Dave asked this question. Any additional intel on punt returns outside of Caden Saunders? Same question with Nick Singleton on kick returns. He says, thanks in advance. What's the conversation around the return specialist so far this spring?
It was asked last night. I believe Greg Pickle asked about that last night. And what I took away from that is they're not doing a ton of intensive work on returns right now. I think there's other priorities here. And obviously, you know, special teams, a big priority. You want to get those guys in there. You want to see what they can do. Catch percentage is something that was set. If you're playing a drinking game with catch percentage last night,
yeah,
you would not have fared well because they said it a bunch. And then Justin Lustig came out and echoed the same thing. You know, you've got guys that can do it, or you feel pretty confident to do it. They always like to put running backs back there, fielding kickoffs. So maybe a Cam Wallace is out there. You know, you get a chance to, you know, we didn't see Quentin Martin this week, but like, he's a guy that can certainly factor in there. With the punt return, you know, until somebody sort of takes it from Caden Saunders, I could see it, you know, being Caden Saunders, but you've got guys like King Mack. You've got some other defensive guys. I know Elliot Washington's been back there at times. So you've got options because you're so athletic across the board. You have that opportunity. But from what they said last night, and this was me putting on my Bauer hat and reading between the lines here, is they haven't done a ton of it, and they're going to focus a lot more on that in the summer. And I think that makes sense, especially when you're trying to accomplish everything that you can get done in 15 practices, because that's not a lot of time to work.
So I'm going to actually save this question, and this is now a tease for tomorrow's show, because Scott L. asked a great question, and I'm going to ask Fitz and Ryan Snyder this question tomorrow, and for some reason it did not pop up there for very long. But basically the question is, official visits coming up, but official visits are now unlimited. Can you trust official visits? We've always said follow the visits. We're going to have that conversation in part tomorrow. Obviously, Matt Zollers is making his decision tomorrow. That's a huge thing coming up at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com, so make sure you subscribe and check all those things out. Fitz, I'm previewing tomorrow for you. Nate, any previews, any things you're thinking about, other additional thoughts from last night that you're going to be writing about at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com?
Oh, man. Now I'm on the spot.
I mean, it's only the question I ask you to end every show.
Yeah, I know. Well, listen, I've got some basketball transfer stuff that I'm keeping in mind, understanding where that's at. And yeah, I think that, you know, I'm starting to see the finish line of the blue-white game as for the first half of spring practice, I don't think that you get great understanding of, you know, more on the back half, put it that way, of spring practices, right? When you get into these last 3-4 practices, and last night, I believe they have 6 more, including the blue white game.
Yep.
We're right next week. We should have a fairly good idea of guys who have made moves, guys who have put themselves in position to set themselves up well to compete in the summer. So
Bane Train back here with one more. He says blue white better not have this weather. I got an early weather report yesterday from the assembled media group, and it's supposed to look beautiful next week, including next weekend. Don't know if that's
how would you say that out loud?
Yeah,
because it was
all your fault.
I you're right.
Can't wait for snow.
Well, Fitz, get us out of here on a positive note then. You know, I mentioned Matt Zollers. What are you, I guess, set the stage for everyone who wants to know about the top quarterback making a decision tomorrow.
Yeah, Zoller's going to make his decision tomorrow. I know he just got back from Georgia this morning. A couple of visits down there, Alabama and Georgia. Missouri certainly still in the mix. Dropped a few nuggets this morning on our board at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com, so check that out. But yeah, this one's going to be over by, I think, 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. So it's crunch time for anybody that wants to make a last-minute pitch.
Well, my last minute pitch is that you should join us for the show tomorrow. And we got great stuff coming up next week. Blue White week. We've got all kinds of great stuff, including we're going to be at Nittany Cards Plus, 2 p.m. We're going to preview the game. Full-on blue-white game breakdown, I think, is what we're going to be doing. We're going to be having conversation with you as well. You can check out the store. You can hang out with us. And, of course, then we are going to have a tailgate show before the blue-white game, so details on that are coming up, so stay tuned for that as well. And, of course, great coverage from these guys during the game, after the game, and the fallout from all of that, because April 15th isn't just tax day now. The portal opens up as well. So there's all kinds of stuff coming up. Great reason to sign up at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com to get the inside information. Thanks to everybody who's here. Thanks to everybody who participated in the show. We'll be back tomorrow.